Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Kieran Deal and Grace Parra join me to have a Schadenfreude-gasm over the Manafort and Cohen legal trouble, assess the state of the Me Too movement in light of the Asia Argento news, and talk about how hard it is to get movies made starring people who aren't white dudes. And keep listening to find out how abortion ice cream tastes. So I'm at the point in the news cycle where we're recording this on Wednesday morning. I am tired of jokes about how there's no news happening. Like, there's so much news happening that everyone has made the joke that there's too much news happening. Before we get to the news, I wanted to get into some housekeeping. Outside Lands, that was so fun.
Yeah.
Thank you to everybody who came to our first live show. And thank you to Phoebe Robinson, who was an incredible guest. And we're looking forward to, at some point, doing more live shows in the future. So that was really fun.
Yeah. Thank you to that picture of you guys looking like wood nymphs.
We did look very adorable.
We're so silphy.
One more housekeeping thing. More women than ever before have won major party primaries for governor.
Awesome.
That's super exciting. Mm-hmm. There was an Alaska primary this week as well. Last week, there was like Minnesota, Wisconsin, a bunch of different places. Also, I think Wyoming. Trump's guy lost. But women are kind of kicking ass, which is great, and that's good. But let's get into the Schadenfreude part of today's episode of Hysteria.
Oh, yes.
The Germans have a great word for the shameful joy you feel when bad things happen to people you don't like. Donald Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, is going to jail, likely, after admitting while pleading guilty that, among other things, at Trump's direction, he paid women off to stay quiet about sexual relationships. Donald Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, was also yesterday found guilty of 8 counts of various financial skullduggery that veered into nincompoopery after his former deputy, Rick Gates, turned on his former boss and testified. Gates is himself guilty of stealing and spending millions to finance a handful of extramarital affairs, which is a pretty incredible feat considering that the man looks like a peach that is turning into a raisin. Manafort, by the way, is in the same jail as Maria Butina, a 29-year-old Russian intelligence operative who used her feminine wiles to convince mediocre white red state Republican men that she was very interested in them sexually and in learning about guns.
I smell a reality show.
I know. Manafort and Maria just hanging
out.
Oh,
that's great.
Locked up domestically.
Yeah.
I mean, like that.
God. Okay. So here's my thing. I'm starting to think that the Republican Party is made up entirely of men who think strippers like them.
Starting to, Erin. There has been evidence for.
I would say that seems like that goes across the aisle sometimes, though.
Oh, even, yeah.
You know?
That's true.
They're like strippers. People who want to put their vaginas in my face, you know,
it seems like
it's a bipartisan.
A beautiful
love.
Young person interested in me, a pile of mashed potatoes from Nebraska. That has to be real and not anything, doesn't have anything to do with my accessibility to power. So, Kieran, my question for you, how did you feel yesterday as the news just kind of kept on coming?
Oh, just in general?
Yeah, how did it make you feel?
I live my life generally in a state of quiet panic all the time. Mm. So I would say that just reading the news adds to that sense of, and this is in general, I find that there is a sense of, there's a sense of overwhelm, which I'm sure that you guys experience. I'm sure that people in the audience experience, you know, because things happen so quickly, the news cycle's so quick, and it's so like knee-jerk, the reactions are so knee-jerk, But yeah, I think there's been some really interesting questions surrounding Me Too. I will say that this the Michael Cohen development was really interesting in the sense that, like, now it seems like Donald Trump is getting a little zeroed in on, so some terrible things might happen, and that was exciting.
But who is individual one? That is my question.
Yeah. Who is individual one in the Cohen proceedings? It is a mysterious certain
could be anyone.
Could
be anyone.
A certain president, a certain presidential candidate.
There's many.
But one who won.
Yeah. A certain United States current president who will remain nameless.
Who I may or may not have worked for, says Michael Cohen.
Get Mueller on that one, because that's the doozy here.
That's one of the things that like, listening to this, or this whole yesterday news barrage, was every single news story eventually came down to women, like their interactions with women, paying women off, stealing money to hide extramarital affairs.
Omarosa releasing a tape.
Omarosa releasing a tape. Melania is on her way to Africa to teach them how to be best. It's just, there's just these women are kind of at the root of this. And I think that's kind of a funny little epilogue for the grab them by the pussy president.
I think that women are at once tertiary to the actual action here and also being put in positions of blame, ultimately. You know, if women weren't so sexual and throwing their vaginas in Trump's face or in any of these men's face, then they wouldn't have to pay them off.
There's a lot of vagina throwing going on
a lot
this
of
show
vagina
today.
Throwing. Yeah. It's just apt.
I've literally never thrown mine.
I honestly have felt some twinges of jealousy, too, because I want to fix her. How come Trump gets a fixer? Mm. How lovely would it be if we all just got fixers to fix up our little messes? Then I think I'd be more inclined to take a lot of risks in life. And that, I think, is what we are seeing here. We're seeing a lot of risk takers taking risks that really should be kept to their fantasies and left there.
But and usually it's like these are old dudes. That means that if they're getting caught now in a web of lies, the chances that you've done it a lot of times in the past mm-hmm. and gotten away with it and the behavior's been reinforced. Mm-hmm. Like this is probably the tip of an iceberg that's enormous as opposed to something that is, you know, the opposite of that.
Right. Well, it's like all of these guys, it's like watching Paul Manafort, 69 years old. Nice.
Yeah.
A 69-year-old man going out and trying to throw a pass. Like, he used to be a quarterback. It's like, we can assume that at some point in his previous life, or like in his earlier career, Paul Manafort was like the Joe Montana of corruption.
Yeah.
And now he's getting old, you know, he's getting sloppy and he's finally just got caught. Mm. Another thing that I wanted to say before we, because our friends at Pod Save America and Love It or Leave It and all different other Crooked Media podcasts are definitely going to be talking about this as well. Mm-hmm. But one thing I want to say before we move on is that I think that the feeling that I felt yesterday was out of breath. Like, I was a little lightheaded, and I was a little scared and a little turned on. Mm-hmm. I think because I was so excited about what was happening, I was like, yes, this is better than most dates I've gone. But here's another thing that it reminded me of. It reminded me of the waning days of the 2016 campaign when we were all so fucking cocky mm-hmm. that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president of the United States. And what ended up happening is that people didn't vote. People stayed home. Mm-hmm. People didn't take seriously the fact that Donald Trump could end up being president of the fucking United States. And what we have coming up in November is a chance to flip the House, first of all, and to maybe flip the Senate. Once those things happen, then some actual consequences might see Donald Trump's presidency. Mm-hmm. Like what we need to do, because the Republicans that are currently in charge, they're not going to do anything. We know that they're not going to do anything. The thing between what happened yesterday and something actually happening to Donald Trump is people voting. Mm-hmm. We can't be too cocky. I mean, it's fun to be cocky, but we can't be too cocky.
No, I don't think we can be at all. And I also think there's something else amidst with the Kavanaugh of it all, which I think also is, I mean, it's very likely to happen. He's very likely to be confirmed. But I also think that there are some calls that we can make as everyday voters to try to stop that from happening, mm-hmm. which may not, again, come to fruition, but it is something that we can do. I'll also point you guys to this amazing video of Beto O'Rourke that's been making its ways. Obviously, I'm a Texan. Shout out to all my Texans out there. But if you guys have not seen Beto speak about kneeling at football games, I think you really should. And of course, he's running against Ted Cruz. He's an example of somebody who can really flip the script here. And I support him to no end. And I encourage all of you out there to support those guys vocally and women vocally too. Mm-hmm.
One thing that is a little nuts is that in the days leading up to the election, if that the thing that Michael Cohen had suppressed had come out, because I think it was like about 10 days before the election, the mm-hmm. Stormy Daniels thing, would that have had any influence? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's parts of me that wonder, it's like, if that piece of information had been leaked, because I feel like the thing that sealed Hillary's fate towards the end was that the resurfacing of the emails very close to her, you know what I mean? So it's like, just that lead up to the election can also be such a damning time. It doesn't change your point about, you're like, but still vote. I see it on your face. She's like, but vote also. But definitely vote.
I will point to the fact that yesterday, right after this news broke about Manafort and Cohen, Trump led a rally in West Virginia where people were shouting, lock her up, lock her up. just no impact whatsoever on people who are Trumpers, you know?
Yeah.
And that is super upsetting. It's just like this kind of stuff is not going to make an impact because they don't believe media. And so he's created this narrative where anything coming out of CNN or MSNBC or the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times just isn't true.
Yeah, famous liberal bastion, the Wall Street Journal.
Exactly. truth isn't truth now.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think that one thing that might be positive about continuing to show his rallies, because I hate that they're wall-to-wall covered.
Yeah.
But I think that there are people who fancy themselves reasonable Republicans who maybe don't want to be on team people still chanting lock her up, like delusionally, mm-hmm. months and months and months and months after this was put to bed. So maybe showing it is just like get a load of these wackos is sort of like a good way to convince people who think of themselves as reasonable that maybe a tax cut isn't worth electing a madman president.
Right.
But we have to move on. I want to go into some news that is a little bit thorny to talk about, and it's something that I don't think I have answers for, and I don't think that it should be positioned as a thing that should have answers. But, you know, the Me Too movement now, I think we're coming up on a year since everything went down with the Harvey Weinstein story broke. I would argue that the Me Too movement started when President Trump got elected, and a bunch of women were like, what the fuck? And then, you know, we had Bill O'Reilly and Roger Ailes at Fox kind of falling slowly, and then there was a drip drip, and then all of a sudden there was a waterfall. But there's a lot going on in the world of sexual harassment this week and of late. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is Keith Ellison, who is a Democratic candidate for Attorney General of Minnesota. He was actually the nominee. He won last week in the primary. But right before the election, Ellison was accused of abuse by an ex-girlfriend who is an organizer for the Sierra Club. And she said that when they were together, actually, the allegation was first made public by her son, who wrote about it on Facebook, and she confirmed to the New York Times that she suffered, quote, narcissist abuse during a long relationship with Ellison, including verbal abuse and being dragged off a bed. But he won his primary anyway. Minnesota has a lot of early voting. We can't be sure, you know, why he won. But I also think that being from the Twin Cities area, but across the border in Wisconsin, I know a lot of people who live in Minnesota and vote in Minnesota. And I get the impression that a lot of Minnesota voters were not super happy with how the whole Al Franken thing went down.
Yeah.
I think people have maybe drawn a line that's different than just any report of any sort of abusive behavior. It means that I don't vote for somebody. But I mean, I'm pulling that totally out of my ass. But now that he's won his primary for AG, Republicans are running ads against people who support Ellison as I'm going to read the description of it. The ad titled Ashamed has been tailored to target several Democrats running for the House of Representatives and chastises them for not calling on Mr. Ellison, who is also the deputy chairman of the Democratic National Committee, to drop out of the race. And so it'll be like, candidate is standing by Keith Ellison. Backing Ellison instead of believing his victim, candidate should be ashamed. Grace, what are your thoughts on the Ellison allegations?
I you know, it's disappointing to hear. It's always disappointing. It's always disappointing when leaders, potential leaders of our country, have these allegations put against them. I want to draw attention to a couple things. First, my issue with us talking about the kind of ramifications of this on an electoral basis is that we're, I think, taking away from the problem of harassment and assault, which is a human problem, and it's not a partisan issue. And so that's what's so striking and so problematic to me about these ads that are politicizing and capitalizing on abuse of women for their own political gain. Mm-hmm. Because at the core of it, what I think we're doing is forgetting about the fact that there are women who are victims here.
Mm-hmm.
But I strongly believe that we have no choice but to believe women when they come out with issues of allegations like this. And I think it's cause for us to remember that as a human problem, this isn't just happening in the United States. This is a worldwide problem. And I say that because I think we can get into dangerous territory talking about whether, you know, Republicans are worse or Democrats are worse, which, by the way, like, I don't know. I mean,
Democrats have actually forced people to resign over this. Donald Trump is the president.
Yeah, yeah.
Blake Farenthold, just this past week, former congressman from Texas,
right,
still refuses to pay the $84,000 in taxpayer money he used to settle harassment complaints against him that were founded.
Yeah.
And he blamed F-tards and feminists on
right.
his being ousted.
Right.
We still have in Minnesota running against Angie Craig, a former radio host who has lamented not being able to call women sluts anymore, who is a raging misogynist. And it is like, it makes me, of course we should believe the victim. Of course we should believe when women come forward and say that something happened to them. And of course the Democratic Party, or the DFL is what it's called in Minnesota. Of course the DFL party should look long and hard at Ellison's continued role in it.
Sure.
But like, it is some shit that the Republican Party is running.
Yeah.
You supported a misogynist against Democrats. They have no fucking leg to stand on, as far as I'm concerned. They have no fucking leg to stand on. I don't know. Kieran, what do you think about the fact that Republicans are trying, of all parties, are trying to weaponize this?
It's thorny. I think it's thorny because I do think it's like a low move. It's like, oh, that's like, that's really shitty and low. Because it was like, I watched the ad. It's super exploitative. It's just like garbagey politic garbage. You can look that up in the dictionary.
Garbagey politic garbage.
Garbagey politic garbage. And it's not politics. Uh-huh. It's politics.
With a K.
With a K. Uh-huh. And so it really is, it felt like, it feels like strategy, it feels like tactics, which is super shitty and gross. But it's hard for me to not ignore that, like, we had Bill Clinton in office, too.
Exactly.
And you know, a White House intern was entirely vilified by the Democratic Party, and that was something that was just an okay thing to happen. Mm-hmm. Anita Hill happened, and that was another case where a woman wasn't believed. I really do think that it does exist. Like, I think that there is, harassment is so attached to the notion of power. Mm-hmm. So because it's so attached to the notion of power, who has it, who doesn't have it, and like, it's an exercise in power a lot of times, that to me is prescient, mm-hmm, in the argument. So it's like, what gets dangerous is when it's like, when people on one side of the aisle are like, shame on you, and then something else comes out and then it's like, shame on you. And I think that specifically because then it's like, you know, with something like Asia Argento, mm-hmm, you know, coming out, then it becomes like this thing of like, well, she said this and that's why it's wrong. And it's like, that two things can be true at the same time. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Republicans can be shitty with their ad and like do a terrible job and be going like very low. Mm-hmm. And there can still be problems with Keith Ellison, with, you know, the way that Democrats are handling things. It's like, until you really get proportional representation in office where it mm-hmm matches what our population looks like in terms of gender, race, and class, I think you will continue to see these issues surface again and again, and people are benefiting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm like, again, if you don't see repercussions or this is the first time that we're ever seeing that it like slaps on the wrist for your actions. This was business as usual in every fucking business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In every business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you bring up Asia Argento. Let's talk about that for a little bit. That's something that has been a developing story since Sunday when the New York Times first ran an account of a settlement that Argento, who was one of the original and most vocal accusers of Harvey Weinstein, that Argento herself sexually assaulted or committed statutory rape against a 17-year-old former co-star. She was paying Jimmy Bennett off to basically not go public with it. Her ex-boyfriend, Anthony Bourdain, is alleged to have arranged the payment. Kieran, you said some stuff about power that I think is really interesting, because Argento had power over him. Like, she played his mother in mm-hmm a couple movies, which is fucked up in its own way. But also, here's something that I was thinking about. You know, I was looking at Twitter today, as is my custom, and Ben Shapiro was tweeting about text messages that had been leaked, where Argento essentially confirms mm-hmm that she had slept with him. And what was weird to me was that, like, Shapiro seemed kind of almost crowing about it. Like, he was glad that the woman who accused Harvey Weinstein herself appears to be guilty of perpetuating sexual harassment and misconduct.
I mean, there is, if you are a victim of domestic violence, if you're a victim of sexual violence, the chances that that will be perpetuated down the line mm-hmm in your own history or in your, like, in the way that you act moving forward is more, like, those numbers just go up, you know? So that is a real thing. And that is a thing that I think about too. And that doesn't, That doesn't make it okay. That doesn't make it right. But what happens is hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so it's like, and then an abuse of power happened to you and she did exactly the same thing. She was acting out literally exactly the same thing. For me, it's like the thing that strikes me is, again, two things can be true at once. You can be a victim of rape and you can also be a perpetuator of rape, you know? And I think you had tweeted or you had sent along that tweet from Connor Habib that said, like, this idea of the quest for the perfect victim, you know? And this is, I, for me, I'm like, that's a thing that's existed.
Connor Habib, by the way, is a former sex worker who has, who's like incredibly brilliant. He's a friend of mine. He's really smart about issues of like consent and sex work and violence and how that all kind of interacts. And so his thoughts on this were super interesting, I think. And the perfect victim thing happens in a lot of cases. It's like the when it comes to Harvey Weinstein's victims, we've seen a kind of smear campaign that it seems as though some heft has been behind, like Rose McGowan getting arrested for cocaine possession after leaving her wallet on an airplane and they found a baggie in it. Like, that's, it's just so strange. Asia Argento, clearly she had done something bad in the past, but the way the New York Times got the story was that it was all sent to them anonymously in this very professional, fingerprint-free way. The way TMZ got the text messages confirming that she had had the sexual encounter with Bennett was a similar thing. It was like anonymously submitted and, you know, this is, oh, here you go, do with it what you will. I think that the thing is that we're seeing in common between the ads against Ellison, Ellison supporters, and this sort of Weinstein-esque push against Asia Argento, is that we get into a place where, like, is rape bad or is it not bad? If it's bad, it's bad whenever anybody does it. If sexual misconduct bad or is it not bad? If it's bad, it's bad when everybody, if it's not bad, it's not bad when anybody does it. So you can't be a Republican attacking someone for sexual misconduct and supporting somebody who commits sexual misconduct. You can't be Harvey Weinstein being like, I'm not a rapist because look at this monster rapist saying I'm a rapist. It's like that, that doesn't fly. It's like a snake eating its own tail.
But that's so much of how politics as usual happens. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what we are used to see. We are used to witnessing that hypocrisy, which is, I think, why so many people get disillusioned with people in power and in leadership. It's like, because you are seeing exactly that. You're seeing somebody being like, oh, I'm the good one. And then it's like, you know, a story comes out about them doing something super shitty. You know what I mean? Snakes do eat their own tails and we see it constantly and we're used to it. The other thing I want
to... Are we used to? I've never seen a snake. If I came in, if I walked out of the recording studio right now and there was a snake there eating its own tail, I would be like, that is fucked up.
Snakes shed their skin.
Aaron, you haven't seen enough snakes.
I mean, I think that, that's a good point. And I think that that is probably why politics is so frustrating. I'm just curious, what does this all mean for, like, the Me Too movement? Not that it has, like, leaders or is some, like, we don't have meetings. We don't all get together. We don't get, like, group texts that are like, hey, guys, we're taking down the celebrity this week. Like, what do you think this means for...
Oh, you're not on the email chain?
Oh, God, Aaron.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry.
Hashtag Me Too FOMO.
Yeah, yikes. So you're not going on the cruise?
I mean, the Me Too cruise.
I already got champagne for that.
Yeah, of course. No.
I'm getting a ride with Grace.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, God.
It's,
I mean, it just
carpooling.
You guys, okay, I get it. You fucking hate me. but what do we think this means for, like, the Me Too movement in general? Do you think we're kind of getting into the messy nuance? We've, like, moved past the initial catharsis, and now we're trying to, like, go through the thorny, uncharted territory?
This is rough. You need leaders. I mean, the reality is, like, Rose McGowan has kind of arisen as one of the more vocal members of the movement, and I think it's been generally very positive things. But very positive thing. But when you mention the cocaine and the wallet, like, that kind of stuff seeks to take her down. So what we're seeing is that there inevitably are people who rise to the top of these power structures. And what's frustrating is when you see those voices, whether it's Rose McGowan or whether it's Asia, being taken down, and with very good reason, obviously, especially with the Asia Argento case. But all of this seeks to undermine the movement in general, and seeks to undermine the fact that Me Too is not exclusive to the entertainment industry, nor is it exclusive to the political spectrum. But what we're seeing, I think, is unfortunately a focus. There's too much of a focus on politics and entertainment and the cases in those two industries. And it makes sense because it's sexier than the literature
those
movement,
people also
say.
Have like a mouthpiece by design. Their job is partially to project themselves publicly.
But
and so like there's no like, you know, there's no a movie star has a relationship where people see them and people think that they're entitled to their lives. And a person who works in like, you know, a hotel room, like is a hotel maintenance person, doesn't necessarily have the same outlet.
That's why I think it's contingent on the people who rise as leaders of a movement like this to speak up for people who don't have the kind of platforms that those in the industries of entertainment and politics do. Mm-hmm. Because you have to keep in mind that this is not just exclusive to those two industries. So if you know that, how can you make sure to make this a universal platform for as many people as possible?
Yeah.
And for me, I'm less worried than both of you, I think, about the status of Me Too as a movement, because I am like, I've done a lot of research about this area specifically, like just, you know, for other projects. But it's like, I know that categorically it exists. It exists top down in academia. Mm-hmm. It exists, you
medicine.
Know, yeah, in medicine.
The
it's
service
in,
industry.
It's in STEM. It's just, it really is everywhere. And to me, it's not going away. And when you look historically, it's just like no group or movement in any struggle has ever been monolithic, has ever had perfect leaders. Like, I think it's, the questions are super normal, they're super complicated, and the approaches to solve them are going to be as many as the people affected by them. You know, it's like the fact that, you know, different people are going to like, oh, do we get rid of everyone who's in power, anyone who has any hypocrisy in their background? Like, these are questions that were asked during the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
That's the reason why Rosa Parks rose, as opposed to the two women before her who, you know, were put to the back of the bus, who didn't have such like pristine records, is because there has always been strategy in the way that you approach who gets that platform or who rises or who becomes a poster child, which I really do think comes back to that question of like, you know, when are we going to be able to, you know, kind of hold an identity of a person as imperfect where they can be a victim and a perpetrator of things at the same time?
Right.
Or two things can be true. You can be an amazing president and also a piece of shit to women. Like these things can exist together, and one does not necessarily take away from that other thing. Like, we all have complex identities, I suppose.
What if you're a terrible president and a piece of shit to women?
Yeah. What if you?
It's a bad
what
combo.
If it turns out, in with the benefit of hindsight, you weren't actually that great a president at all?
And you kind of didn't even want to be president.
Yeah. What if that's the case?
Like, I think that's those are really good points, by the way. I just want to compliment.
I agree,
you on
and
that.
But I want to add, Kieran, that I think that your point that it's something that's like huge and all encompassing is maybe why people like Ben Shapiro and like social conservatives seem to crow whenever it seems that there's a crack in the veneer of like the movement in one way or the other, because I think deep down inside a lot of people realize that this is like a massive seismic social change that will, if it continues to move forward, kind of upend the order.
Sure.
And that's terrifying in a visceral way. And I also think that what some people are counting on is for people to just get excited with the easy victories and then kind of move on when they get bored with having to deal with nuance, or when they get bored or kind of frustrated with having to actually go back and take down somebody who's normally on their side. And I also think that, you know, you brought up the civil rights movement, and the difference between Me Too and the civil rights movement is that the civil rights,
the civil
rights movement was a lot more organized. The Me Too movement was like, use a hashtag and whoever goes viral is suddenly the spokesperson for this. So we weren't necessarily able to cultivate and choose the leaders of Me Too in a way that, you know, the civil rights movement was able to choose Rosa Parks. We have to just go with who was the loudest and the quickest. And now we're seeing how that looks.
Do you think that we need a governing board of some kind? I mean, we mentioned this kind of in jest earlier.
I think we need to unionize. I've been saying this for a really long time.
I don't hate that
idea. I like the way that you just want to unionize everything. You're like, juice, it needs to be unionized. It all needs unionization. But
we have to take a break. But when we come back, personal political. Last week, we launched Vote Save America, Crooked's step-by-step guide to make sure everyone votes in the 2018 midterms. If you go to VoteSaveAmerica.com right now, you can pledge to vote and get involved in campaigns going on in your community. Also, you'll get a confirmation email where you can check and see if you're registered to vote. Right now, these are the main things we want you to do. We get emails all the time that are like, what do we do? This is what we want you to do. Go to VoteSaveAmerica.com. But as we get closer to the election, we'll be rolling out more tools to let you know what the big issues are in your state, who's on your ballot, where to vote, and how to make sure everyone else you know votes too. You can also join our Vote Save America Facebook group and follow the Vote Save America hashtag to see all the great work people just like you have already been doing.
Menards 11% rebate is here. From lighting to lumber, from doors to floors, the bigger the project, the bigger the rebate. From painting projects to that new kitchen makeover and designing that outdoor space of your dreams, save big on any project you're tackling. Hurry into Menards for an 11% rebate on everything. Mail-in rebate is a merchandise credit check, not a point-of-sale discount. Redeemable on future in-store purchases only. Not on future purchases on Menards.com. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two forts of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
And we're back with a segment we call Personal Political. This is where we kind of talk about stuff that isn't maybe the most pressing leading the Rachel Maddow show story, but it's something that we are thinking about and talking about. I want to talk about representation in pop culture. And the reason I want to talk about it is because Crazy Rich Asians is a crazy rich hit. It won the top spot in the box office, I believe, over the five-day weekend. I think it took in $34 million was the last number I saw, which is good. It beat the Mark Wahlberg movie. I don't know what it's Mark Two Wahlberg Electric Boogaloo.
Wahlbergen?
Wahlbergen? With a little apostrophe?
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
It's a verb now. Okay. Yeah. It's a gerund with a folksily dropped G.
Yep.
But here's something I was thinking about. You know, there's a cover story of Time magazine about how the Crazy Rich Asians is changing everything. There's a ton of stories, and a lot of Asian American women I know are really excited about seeing people that look like them on the big screen depicted in this like fun, funny way. But I also was thinking about how there have been a lot of hits involving people that you don't necessarily always see represented in film over the last several years. And all of them have had a similar like kind of reaction cycle to them. And then what ends up happening is nothing really changes that much. So almost exactly a year ago, Girls Trip hit $100 million at the box office. And I remember when that came out, everyone was like, oh, look, a group of hilarious black women can carry a road trip movie. And I think they're making Girls Trip 2, but there hasn't been a ton of changes when it comes to representation in film. TV is different, but in film, it's pretty much still the same. Earlier this summer, Black Panther broke $700 million domestic. Also incredible. Also, you know, the change that's happening is pretty glacial. And then I was thinking back to 2011 when Bridesmaids proved finally, once and for all, that women can be funny. And that's why all the movies now are made with women being funny. I hate to sound cynical because I don't want to pretend like Crazy Rich Asians isn't breaking barriers or breaking new ground, because it is. But I also am a little bit... I hesitate to participate in Hollywood patting its own back for doing things like this. And Karen, I know that you have, you know, worked on features and you've made documentaries and you have personal experience trying to get something made that features people that aren't necessarily people you always see. And I just would love to hear your thoughts on Crazy Rich Asian success and what that means for other people who are not white dudes making movies.
Yeah, I would say, well, first the positive, I don't know if you found this too, Grace. It's like, I know on Facebook, I know I've had friends who are Asian American being like, oh, it's so emotional. Just like, it's like Crazy Rich Asians is essentially a Cinderella story, but it's like choking up when they go to the movies. Cause it's like, you literally, I know that feeling when you literally haven't seen anyone who looks like you on screen, and the way that affects who you think you can be. I think that even as a, you know, we think of ourselves all as like relatively intelligent or like independent thinkers. But I remember
I'm an idiot.
Yeah, yeah. Except for you, Erin. You know, you, that's Erin. Why you weren't invited to the cruise.
I'm so we're gonna miss you so much.
Yeah,
you guys are gonna miss you. You're so mean. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Carrie. Continue.
No, but there's definitely like, but I saw people's reactions on Facebook. People were buying tickets for other people. Like this one writer that I know got, you know, 10 or 20 tickets for other people so that people could go and see this film, which is really, you know, this idea of a movement. And even when you hear the actors in that movie talking about it and saying how they felt like they're a part of something bigger than themselves, because, you know, and the example I'll give is like when I started stand-up, it had never occurred to me to do stand-up. Like it never occurred to me that like I could be a person who did stand-up. And it took being a part of that CBS Diversity Showcase, which Grace, you now are a director for.
Yeah, very impressive.
But it's like, but seeing, you know, people like Tiffany Haddish or Hasan Minhaj, like actually like doing stand up and being in the same room as them. And I was like, oh, maybe that's a thing I could do. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like before they were like big, you know, with the.
All the people.
Yeah. But just it was that I thought that was very powerful. And to me, it's like Crazy Rich Asians does that. I think the reason that films film has a very glacial kind of pace in which it is moving is film is a super high risk business. Because I definitely, more than probably anyone here, get like very heated and like get on my high horse about all kinds of like, why isn't this moving faster? Blah, blah, blah. I do a lot of finger pointing, a lot of Bernie.
She's doing a jig right now in the studio.
A lot of Bernie finger pointing.
It's sort of like a 1920s era jig. You're doing like the sort of loose wristed, like Charleston.
That's right.
The stock market will never go down.
You're yelling at the chimney sweep in the corner right there. You better hurry up and do his work now.
Oh, you've got a good barky early 20th century. Century voice.
Well, thank you so much. This is how I grew up, you know.
That's how they do it in Texas.
That's how they do it in Texas, see.
So it does move really slowly. And it's something that it is high risk. But why do you think that do you know of any stories of people like trying to get films made with like maybe a lesser known person of color at the head of it and getting pushback from studios?
Yeah. So I would say like, okay, so in the negative, it's like in terms of when you are trying to make a movie and you're trying to make a bankable film, because film is such a high risk business, people are looking for ways to ensure their investment, ways to say that we can guarantee that this movie is going to make X, Y, or Z amounts of money. So all of that is based on past history. So if you don't have examples of Black women or Asian people or a Black superhero movie, it becomes very hard to create the paradigm of saying like, we can predict that this is going to make this much money. It becomes an even more high-risk venture in a high-risk venture, you know. And so I think that there's a thing called, you guys probably know about it, is a thing called foreign value. I put that in air quotes. Mm-hmm. That's assigned to each actor. So Tom Cruise is considered a quote-unquote valuable actor because he can open a movie theater in Czechoslovakia. Will Smith is a valuable actor because you can go to a village in Africa and kids will be like, Will Smith, Will Smith. They know who he is, which means that your name can open up a movie theater somewhere else. Uh-huh. We have very few of those people who are minorities. We just have very few of them in general. Even white guys, even white women, like it's a tiny handful of people, and it's getting smaller as the industry becomes more diversified anyway. And as like, you know, movies include people across the board and stories become more important than the people in the stories. Mm-hmm. Like you have very few, like the idea of the bankable movie star of the 90s, the Harrison Ford or whatever, is already going away, but it is the system that people hold on to.
Yeah.
To help them defray the cost or say to an investor, like, yo, this is why this is going to work. This is why you're going to make your money back. So you have to remember that there's a huge divide between what an audience is looking for and like who feels underrepresented and like why wouldn't you put, you know, a trans woman in a role to play a trans woman, and people who are taking the risk, who are getting the money from people who are taking the risk and who are justifying that risk.
Are those people who are putting in money perchance old white men? Just throwing that out there. I could be way off the mark. Still trying to figure out who individual one is over here.
Yeah. I think the dirty little secret of Hollywood. It's like, if you can bankroll it,
Dirty little secret.
There's only one. There's only one. And like, I think the most important one is like, if you can bankroll it, you can make it, right? So it's like, if you can get somebody who has a bone to pick, who like wants to make the thing about Asians or make the thing about women or make the thing about black women, then you make the movie. But yeah. these are very, very high risk endeavors. You have to be willing to like lose the money. You have to remember that to market a film. So even if you make a movie for under $5 million, it's like to market the P&A on that movie is like another $20 million. So that movie needs to make over like $25 million, which is why you're seeing so many movies on Netflix. I try to remind myself, it's like people aren't meaning to be sexist and racist. They are following a business model out of fear, and it leads to them looking sexist and racist.
Right.
It's not that like, I'm going to be sexist and racist today. It's like, I'm afraid. I'm looking at the business models that exist before me. It's not worth my job to take the risk or be the one to put myself on the front lines. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't want to take these bets.
But that's why it's so insidious, right? Because nobody thinks that it's their fault. And a lot of the people who are like, wow, we should be less, you know, which always doesn't include the person talking about it. We should be less sexist and racist. Sexism and racism is bad. But it doesn't occur to them that they're people that are perpetuating it. And the reason it perpetuates is because it's so mundane. It's not something mm-hmm. that people think of.
It is. There's a mundaneness. One article that I did like, there was, and I think I sent it to both of you guys, was mm-hmm. The Vulture article where they were talking about To All the Boys I Loved Before.
No spoilers.
Oh, yeah. No.
I haven't watched it yet.
No.
I haven't
spoilers. But
wait.
That was the Netflix movie that came out with an Asian American girl in the lead. And like it got a little bit of heat on Twitter and social media. And people were saying it's the first like good rom-com that Netflix has released. And it's really striking to see an Asian American girl as a lead. It's based on a book property. And the author was saying that she really wanted to keep the integrity of the lead being Asian American, and only one production company was willing to do that. Again, very high risk for mm-hmm. the production companies, but I believe it was Overbrook Entertainment, which is Will Smith's company. So again, mm-hmm. somebody with a tremendous amount of power, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I don't know if any of those people listen, but it's like, you need front runners like those to say that, you know, we can make a viable change,
right.
or we believe that heroes can look like something else. And hopefully, when people continue voting with their money at the box office, there becomes more of a track record over time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to help you make a case to continue moving in that direction. A
couple of things on that. First of all, I think that's why in some ways To All the Boys I've Loved Before is maybe even more impactful than Crazy Rich Asians, because I think what we're seeing right now with Crazy Rich Asians is an example of Hollywood still perpetuating tokenism. So like, yes, this is the Asian movie, but it's the Asian movie. Mm. There's one out there right now. Mm. And that is not showing progress just yet. Mm-hmm. So this goes back
to... Could be step one in progress, but
absolutely.
For now it is step question mark.
Exactly, exactly. And I think we are seeing that with some types of filmmakers. Like the fact right now that right now you can watch Sorry to Bother You and Black Klansman, that you have movies by Boots Riley and Spike Lee coexisting out, and they're both excellent, you know, from African-American men is huge. And I think 10 years ago wouldn't have existed, because the tokenism of there really only being space for one African-American director mm-hmm. was the thing that existed. And we are moving in a direction right now you can have multiple African-American male directors out there creating. And we need to start seeing that ultimately with all of the minority voices out there. I know from the, you know, Latino perspective, Latinx perspective, you know, we've had a few discussions about this, actually.
Absolutely.
It's at once exhilarating and a little frustrating to see so many Mexican directors achieving a ton of success. But where are the Mexican actors, and where are the Latino actors who are, you know, in the movies put out by Mexican directors?
Mm-hmm. And this was something, because we said, like, there's, like, Los Tres Amigos, which is, like, mm-hmm. Iñárritu, Alfonso Cuarón, and mm-hmm. Guillermo del Toro, who just mm-hmm. won, they've all won Oscars mm-hmm. for best directing or best film or whatever it is. They've all won Oscars.
Killing the game.
Killing it.
Killing
and they're
it.
Best friends.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Like, can we just be friends with them?
Yeah.
First of all.
Guillermo
note.
Del Toro, by the way, played Pappy McPoyle on Always Sunny.
Oh,
that's Guillermo.
What?
Yeah, that's
I
Guillermo
didn't
del
know
Toro.
That. Okay, my mind is blown right
I
now.
I just like the idea of like oh him with God. His big glasses and his like big eyes,
yeah.
just being like, "I like my monsters.
I need to
Thank
hear
you for
that
liking
story.
Me and my monsters.
He loves his monsters.
Yeah, he is an adorable man. You just want to give him a hug.
He loves his monsters and he's Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
God, I love that. That's very very cool.
But the big thing is, but all of those movies do star. Holly, like it's Sandra Bullock, it's Michael Keaton, they all star white actors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, to an extent, I'm sure that they were participating in the Hollywood system because they're like, this is how I'm going to get my movie made. And I don't fault them, but I definitely see the room for growth of being able to, you know, open and expand that. And what's cool is hopefully now you know, there's a little bit more of a precedent to be like, yo, these movies can make money. The other thing that you have to remember is that the movies now, they have to be good. Mm-hmm. Like, you got, mm-hmm. it's very, mm-hmm. very hard to make a good movie. Mm-hmm. Make a fucking dope movie. Mm-hmm. Like, make a movie that's dope and then put people in who might not look like, you know, whatever the status quo is. But the movie has to be good. You can't just put minorities in a thing, have them be garbage. Mm-hmm. You know, there's yeah. terrible actors of every ethnicity. You got to have a dope actor and you got to have a dope movie. That's my soapbox.
Mm-hmm. I think that, speech. You know, it's
dope actor, dope movie.
And
keep
I think,
it in your pants.
I think
and if, keep it in your pants.
Keep it in your pants.
But and don't come on the cruise, Erin.
Okay, we have to take a break, and I'm going to yell at Kieran and Grace for not taking me on the Me Too cruise. But when we come back, dessert.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
And we're back with dessert. This is the part of the show where we talk about stories that would never, ever, ever make the front page because they don't really matter. But we can't stop thinking about them anyway. I have a story that is my favorite news story of the week. The headline is, "Woman cons dozens of men into date, then sets them against each other." So Natasha Aponte, who is a model in New York City, went on Tinder, as a lot of women do, and set up one-on-one dates with not one, not two. She didn't pull the Mike Seaver and set up like two dates. Not two, but dozens and dozens of men. And she set the date. She said, "Meet me in Union Square Park at X o'clock in the after 6 p.m. on a Sunday." Hundreds of men arrived at Union Square Park at 6 p.m. thinking they were going to go on a one-on-one date with Natasha Aponte. And what they found was a stage where her friend was DJing. And Aponte took the stage and explained that she was going to like subject them to a series of challenges to get them to go out on to figure out who gets to go on a date with her. One of the men made a Twitter thread about this and it went viral. That's how we all know about it. And also, just grain of salt, it seems like there was a company, like a PR company, behind the effort. I still think that it was really fucking funny. I think it's great. Everybody should do that.
I think it's fun. I think like it's hilarious to see brand integration now with dating apps.
Right.
That like this is, I guess this is the wave of the future. Why market anywhere else but Tinder? Because this is where people are. So I
maybe she was just promoting like male friendships. It's really hard for adult men in America to make friends. That is a well-known sociological fact. So it's maybe true. She was doing a social good.
Was it to promote Tinder specifically?
No,
was that
not
the
to
brand?
Promote Tinder, but she was working with a production company called the Rob Bliss Creative, which is a viral marketing company. So they're definitely trying some experiments to see how things can go viral via dating apps.
A lot of things can go bacterial via dating apps. Grace, what's your story?
My story is, this is so hilarious to me. Hooters are closing because millennials don't like boobs. So apparently the number the number of Hooters stores, Hooters of course being the Wang's place, you can go and get Wang's and tits at the same time, but you can't get tits. It's just like, I guess, ladies in like tight shirts.
Yeah,
and
they're being paid to be there,
Who are being paid to be there will also serve you hot wings. The number of Hooters in the U.S. has fallen by 7% from 2012 to 2016. So this is because millennials apparently are not going to Hooters, and specifically there is a study that says that millennials are just not as interested in boobs anymore. And this is from Pornhub.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which I think is not true. I think maybe people just don't want to see boobs while they're also eating chicken wings.
And right. It's a very specific demographic of the boobs. Because strip clubs haven't gone down their patronship.
I don't think they have.
And there's a lot of boobs at strip clubs also.
Yeah. And I think there's also a lot of butts at Hooters, just like there's a lot of butts at strip clubs too. So just be equal offenders here. Or equal lovers, perhaps, of both the rump and the tit.
Yeah. Also, like...
The Rump and the Tit.
The Rump and the Tit.
That's the name of your first novel.
The Rump and the Tit by Grace Parra.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I was picturing... That sounds more like an old-timey English pub to me.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
The Rump and the Tit. Go get a toad in the hole. Kieran, what's your dessert today?
Nayrol offered an abortion-flavored ice cream.
Flavored
ice cream that causes a stir. Now, I was very excited when I clicked on this because I was like, ooh, are there gummy babies in the ice cream? Like, I was very excited.
You wanted it to be real dark.
I wanted it to go, I wanted it to go dark. I wanted there to be cherries. I wanted there to be red colors. Wow, like, that's where I was like, my mind was like, ooh, we're going on a deep dive, mm-hmm, people. Mm-hmm. But no, this ice cream shop in Portland did a Rocky Roe v. Wade ice cream that caused a stir. They were charging like $9.50, and they're giving the money to Nayrol to quote unquote save Roe from President Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. So, you know, which is I thought that's a fun gesture. I mean, and apparently it was still a controversial one that made the news on Fox News.
Yeah.
But for me, I was like, Rocky Roe v. Wade is just putting, you're just taking an old ice cream flavor and adding Roe v. Wade to it.
You wanted it to be offensive.
I wanted it to be an invention of like a kind of like abortive ice cream flavor. Do you know what I mean?
Like maybe something that like flavors that just don't belong together, perhaps?
You could go a number
of
ways.
This is an abortion of a flavor. It's peanut butter and pickles. Actually, I did have peanut butter and pickle from Salt and Straw recently. Delicious.
Okay.
Oh, man.
But Salt and Straw is a great example. They're creating new flavors every month. So I thought that they were going to create flavors that would be the abortion flavors.
Oh, okay. Your taste buds, your palate was not tickled.
Yeah, just as Fox News was disappointed that there was abortion-flavored ice cream, I was disappointed that it wasn't more specifically abortion-flavored. So we were all a little disappointed.
You're just coming at it from different angles.
Yeah, we're disappointed for different reasons.
Right.
I was thinking it might be like morning after ice cream. If you just had a rough night and you're like, you know what, I think I screwed up, then you can go have some ice cream.
That's a business.
Yeah.
Bye, guys. I quit. Well, that's all the time we have for dessert. Let's do the hill I'll die on. Kieran, do you want to go first?
My hill would be I'm at a place in my life where I don't want to be in love. Like you were saying, I was going to say, you were talking about you liked the mass Tinder date, but in a way I was like, but all those people trying to find love, I like felt bad for them. I know that I personally am in a place where I don't want to be in love. I just want to be not irritated. Don't annoy me with your open mouth chewing and the way that you smell and by farting in my bed and creating, you know, an atomic proportion of garbage fire in my bed. You know what I mean? My standards are lower. That's what I'm saying as a human being. That's where I am as a person. And I think that's when you'll find companionship.
that's a way to do it. Okay. The hill I'll die on this week is that I think beaches are kind of gross.
Yeah, I think
kind of like they're there. It's like the people that are laying on them, you lay on them all day and then you get up and you leave and the next day it's the same sand, but new bodies and feet and water. It's and the ocean is kind of nature's toilet.
And you know people are peeing in that shit.
People are peeing. For sure. People are peeing everywhere.
But Earth is used by everyone also all the time.
It's all disgusting.
It's all disgusting. It's all disgusting. Okay, great. So it's yours.
Like Kieran, I would also like to not be irritated, but what I'm talking about here is hair follicle irritation, which is to say the hill that I will die on is that male razors are just better than female razors for all parts of our bodies. Mm. And I think that is fucked up and I don't like it. And I want someone to prove me wrong. I want a razor that's marketed for women to actually be better and to get that close shave than male razors.
Male razors are good.
I've gone straight male razor now for the last several years and male shaving cream too, because it's cheaper and because it's better.
Huh.
Yeah. No pink tax.
No pink tax on that stuff at all. So yeah, hit me up if you guys have a good female razor that I need to get on. I'm in the market.
All right, Grace and Kieran, thank you so much for hanging out today.
Thank you. See you on the cruise.
Yeah, to the cruise, Grace. To the cruise.
Thanks for listening to Hysteria. If you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. If you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes and also tell all your friends. And we will see you next week.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothes.
Dan is very busy, clothes only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.